Retrograde, Chapter 4, The Holy Land. The months stretch into years, and even after three, still Nicola walks beside this strange young version of his heart. Pazienza becomes his chant. Patience, patience. He is determined to show Yusuf the same measure of patience and kindness that was shown to him. Yusuf is so much more skeptical as a young man. He holds everything back, or tries to at least. Nicola knows every movement, every twitch of his hands. He manages to pretend he doesn't see it, tries to give him some measure of privacy as he works through his immortality. Still, it is one thing to see Yusuf angry, quite another thing entirely to feel powerless to fix it. He is desperately lonely for company. He knows if Yusuf were here, his Yusuf, he would look at him with a fond expression and tease him for acting like a child. But as it stands, he is alone with Yusuf's eyes that are too hard and turn cold too quickly. He takes to quizzing Yusuf after each one of his dreams. Which way did the mountains curve? What kind of thread did you see? Draw for me the carvings you saw. Yusuf humors him for a time, but quickly grows tired of it. Nicola feels the tension rise and backs off without a word. He is forever doing this delicate dance of flirtation and distance. It is a headache, and one that Yusuf often runs out of patience for. One time Yusuf draws his sword and holds the tip steady at Nicolo's throat, demanding the secrets of the future. Nicola has half a mind to let him surrender this war of attrition and escape to any life, any future, anything, to get away from this stranger with his partner's face. Patience. Patience. But then he will walk alongside Yusuf and hear him murmuring as they travel and realize that the man is reciting the Ligurian vocabulary he has learnt. He learns Nicolo's native tongue with the same focus and determination he puts to everything else, at first forming the clumsy sentences with fits and starts, nothing like the easy fluidity Nicolo is used to. Until one day, as Nicola passes him his oiled and sharpened sword, and Yusuf murmurs his thanks in practiced Ligurian and makes an offhand comment about the weather, and Nicola's heart seizes in his chest. Nicola needs an outlet and takes out his frustration in a personal mission behind enemy lines where Yusuf cannot follow. He strips a crusader uniform from a corpse and slips into the camp. He remembers enough of the structure and protocol to manipulate himself into a position of authority there. He cuts and reroutes supply lines enough to disrupt their outpost and force the army to retreat across ground they had gained. When he is discovered, he fights his way out of there, cutting down peasant and knight alike, barely more than a few good hits landing on him. He finds Yusuf again, covered in blood, and only a little of it is his. And Yusuf grasps for the hilt of his sword. Nicola, are you... Still me, Nicola assures him. I did not die. It is surprisingly difficult to die here. Most deaths in these wars are slow, from infection and disease, slow enough that their bodies heal before they succumb. Nicola has seen bullets rip through a body and still kill the one behind it. Arrows can puncture, and swords can slice, but going down and playing dead for a moment is often enough time to heal up before life is snuffed out. That is, if the enemy even gets close enough to attack. Nicola is earning quite a reputation for himself on the battlefield. Yusuf isn't quite so lucky. He has died twice more since Nicola joined him, and both times Nicola blames himself. He had moved too quickly through the attacking army, leaving the remainders to be handled by Yusuf, but it was too much for him, and he was overwhelmed. He's still so early into his training. How quickly he forgets that Yusuf doesn't know the steps to their dance. Nicola holds entrails in Yusuf's gut as the wound stitches over, and Yusuf gasps to life. "What should I do if you die?" Yusuf asks the next day, as they bury yet another one of Yusuf's countrymen. The young soldier had seen Yusuf rise from the dead, but had been killed in battle shortly after. "You must be patient with me," Nicola replies easily. Speak to me. Tell me where we are, what we need, and I will follow you. Why? You are, Nicola waves a hand, grasping for the word in either tongue, il mio unico punto fermo. Yusuf squints, trying to parse the Ligurian. Fixed? My rock. Anywhere I am, you are. Yusuf doesn't respond to that, but the line in his brow says he is thinking about the nature of free choice and determinism again. They lead a small band of highly trained men through the mountainous terrain to circumnavigate a battalion of crusaders. It's a risky mission, one they would be happy to take on themselves, but the men with them are foolish and brave, as they themselves once were. Nicolo and Yusuf take the night watch together so they can speak of secret things without being heard. Nicolo is digging into the ground with a stick, keeping his hands busy. This war is so slow, he complains, about nothing in particular. It is difficult and time-consuming to move an army without horses or jeeps. There is so much waiting. I have seen war where it is death after death. These weapons are brutal, but not every time lethal. You are saying that bows and swords improve over time? Yusuf asks, one of the rare times he inquires, after the future, in good humor. Humans are warmongers. They will continue to perfect the craft long after we are gone. The mission goes sideways, and they are left dragging their wounded men away, too many dismembered and close to death's door they have to leave behind, carrying only the few who could perhaps survive. Nicolo doesn't let them stop until they reach a well that still has clear water. He washes everything, even the open wounds, and is so frenetic that Yusuf is exasperated, proclaiming, "My hands are clean!" as Nicolo pours fresh water over them again before he tends to the next wounded. When they return to the army, they're wounded in tow. Nicolo is suspected as a double agent, and they are run out of the camp. They barely escape alive, and they run through the night and most of the next day. In hiding, they have the chance to discuss their families again. Nicolo has already decided. His family is half a world away, and even if he could guarantee he would survive the journey, he had already lived so many years apart from them and seen Genoa changed. To revisit would be to reopen a wound already healed. Yusuf doesn't have that luxury. He decides to leave for his homeland and tells Nicolo he will be back before winter sets in. Nicolo says goodbye with a heavy heart and stays in the border towns. He learns of a gang of bandits that is taking advantage of the destabilized area. He hunts them to their hideout, careful not to be seen until he knows the full scope of their operation. The slaughter is brutal and bloody and not nearly as satisfying as he had hoped. He raids their supplies and takes most of their equipment and coin. Unfortunately, these caves are a little too routinely used to be good for longer-term storage, so he sets out to leave the valuable items outside of homes he knows have been targeted. The coin he counts out and keeps, wondering if this same small pile of money will continue to be grown and invested until it buys a small farm and cottage, overlooking the sea at a Mediterranean island. Nicola rents himself out as a hired hand to a farming family there, and they are amazed at his pale skin that never burns in the sun. The family has seen a few deserters pass through their town, hoping for a better life far away from war. None, however, that speak their language or are as kind as Nicolo. When Yusuf returns, he finds Nicolo drunk and dancing with a girl child a little more than 10 years old. The family that had taken him in, celebrating the first chills of winter with a bonfire. His confusion at the scene is evident and only deepens when Nicolo can't help but embrace him. He moves back before Yusuf can react, holding him firmly by the shoulders. Yusuf, are you well? He greets the family briefly but turns back to Nicolo. We should be going. We have more work to do further north. Yusuf can't bear to speak of what he saw in his hometown. He wants to hold it close to his chest, but the way Nicolo looks at him fills his heart with bitterness. Nicolo knows, he's sure, He's heard it all before, and it makes Yusuf uncomfortable to know that even his most treasured thoughts will one day be exposed to this man he doesn't trust. He is grateful, though, for the preparation Niccolo has done in the months Yusuf traveled. They now have packs and rations, good quality boots, and more coin than he has ever held, even when he traded as a merchant. When he shares this with Niccolo, he gives a small grin. "My father was a trader too," Niccolo says, "and his father before him. Genoa is a port city. Almost everyone is a merchant." "But not you?"
Before I joined the Crusades, I was in training to become a priest," Niccolo says, bashful again.
Yusuf tries to imagine this ruthless warrior covered in blood, blessing communion and leading prayer.
"Being honest, Niccolo, I think you would have made a shit priest."
Niccolo laughs, a full-throated laugh that catches them both by surprise. The weather turns colder, and the days get shorter for their third winter together. Word had reached both armies of the pair of them, each enemy convinced they are working for the other side. There was nowhere for them to go, too infamous to carry out their missions. This is their first winter without the benefit of tents and horses and brothers in arms. They have to keep a fire burning through the night, and each buy an extra outer cloak when they pass through a market. One night, Yusuf wakes to hear the shuffling of feet. He is already alert and reaching for his weapon when he sees Niccolo's shape passing back and forth. Niccolo is fisting handfuls of his hair as he paces, muttering rapid Ligurian like the fall of heavy rain. Yusuf isn't that fluent yet. He only catches a few familiar words. Stupid. Consequences. Patience. You know what she would say.
"Peace, brother," Yusuf calls, raising a hand.
Niccolo releases a strangled sound.
"What is wrong?"
"No, nothing. Nothing is wrong," Niccolo insists, flopping to the ground on the other side of the fire with a thud. "I am merely missing someone who won't be here for a long time." An apology sticks in Yusuf's throat, but he doesn't let it escape.
"You should get some sleep if you can, Niccolo."
The other man stands, jittery, and puts more wood on the fire. "It is a cold night," he says by way of explanation. "This won't do at all." Yusuf shuffles back from his position by the fire and sharply inclines his head at the empty space beside him. There is a beat of silence in the dead of night. Then Niccolo moves and takes the place between Yusuf and the still-burning fire. His hands are twitching, and he doesn't settle easily.
"By the Almighty, you're as skittish as a kitten," Yusuf complains, pinning him down with an arm across his midsection. "Have you never shared warmth with another soldier before?"
"Not for," Niccolo's voice has dropped to a harsh whisper, "not for a long time." "Well then," Yusuf throws the edge of his cloak over the both of them and firmly shuts his eyes. "Sleep," he commands. Yusuf wakes and rolls over onto his back and away from Niccolo. Always quickly alert, Niccolo rises and puts out their smoldering fire. Seeing the Frank move as he does each morning, Yusuf feels a surge of pity at the distressed picture he painted the previous night. Then he feels something approaching fondness for the smile he gives as he gets to work preparing their weapons. They have no mission, no support, and nowhere to go. "I had another dream last night," Yusuf says. Niccolo twitches an eyebrow but doesn't pause his movements, dragging a whetstone against the edge of his blade. "Of the women," Yusuf clarifies. "I think they are close. I could smell some food, familiar food, and I am sure I have seen that river before."
"Could you draw it?" Niccolo asks.
Yusuf takes a stick to the wet, smooth dirt and draws, stepping lightly so his feet don't leave prints. It's a difficult perspective, from some mountaintop overlooking the curves of the river flowing from a large lake. One of the mountains in the distance has a distinct ridge that he points out to Niccolo. In turn, Niccolo points to a certain curve of the river.
"Was there a mosque here, with two spiral minarets?"
"Yes."
I know the place. Or I will one day. The river changes course, but that mountain remains the same. It is maybe a 4-week journey.
Their eyes meet, but they do not speak. Niccolo seems to be waiting on Yusuf for a decision. Yusuf nods. They will seek out the others.
It takes 2 weeks. The women are clearly also seeking them out, and they meet in the middle of a long, rocky valley. Yusuf stands in the middle of the road to meet them first, Niccolo preferring to keep watch from a higher vantage point until contact is made. The Asian one is riding a horse, and the Greek with the lion on her chest walks alongside it. Niccolo refused to tell Yusuf anything more about them, insisting it was important for them to meet as naturally as possible.
"Peace be upon you," Yusuf calls out. "I have been dreaming about you."
The Greek turns to the other woman. "This is the one." She turns back to Yusuf and speaks Arabic with a strange accent.
"Where is the other?"
"Waiting," Yusuf replies, "until you know that we mean no harm." The Greek points to the outcropping of rocks that Niccolo has taken shelter behind and arches her brow. "Ah," Yusuf realizes, "a woman used to ambush." The Greek is on edge, and she confers with the other one in harsh whispers.
"What is your name?" the one seated on the horse asks.
"Yusuf ibn Ibrahim ibn Muhammad al-Kisani."
He pauses.
"Yusuf."
The woman smiles kindly while the Greek scowls.
"I am called Quinn. This is Andromache. She said that we would find you. You must be confused and scared. What do you know?"
"I know that we live and we die and we live again," Yusuf replies, no shred of confusion or fear in his voice. "May I call my friend down?"
The women look to each other and share a sharp nod, and Yusuf twitches his fingers over his head. Niccolo emerges and slides down the rocky slope. His face is unusually impassive, bright eyes darting between the two of them.
"Prove it."
The one named Andromache jerks her chin forward, holding her double-bladed axe at her side. "Before I find out for myself," is heavily implied. Yusuf pulls a dagger from his belt and rolls up his sleeve. He cuts a line across his forearm deep enough that blood gushes forth. He waits a moment, then wipes the blood away, flicking the excess into the dirt. No more blood wells up. His flesh is soft and healed. Quinn dismounts easily and grabs his hand.
"Extraordinary," she says, looking him over. "And impressive that you trust us so quickly. It wasn't like that with Lycan."
"None of this is like it was with Lycan," Andromache mutters, her eyes narrow. "I don't like it." She points a finger at Niccolo.
"This one doesn't speak?"
"Duna my lulain, I am capable of speech," he answers in coin Greek. "My name is Niccolo de Genova."
"The dreams were hazy around you. Why?"
"I cannot say." Andromache has a hard line to her jaw, and she looks him over carefully.
"You know too much."
"I have lived a long time."
"The dreams only started a few years ago," she shoots back. They stare at each other, not giving an inch.
"I am immortal, like you," Niccolo says. "I don't buy it."
"Maybe he is different," Quinn suggests.
Before Yusuf can explain, Andromache speaks again.
"No. Let's see if you really are who you say you are."
Her teeth bare, and she raises her labrys. Niccolo keeps his arms by his side, palms out as she charges at him.
"No, wait," Yusuf screams.
But Andromache buries her axe in Niccolo's chest. Yusuf is over him, his face shaven, and he has a metal helmet on his head. Mud and trenches are common to all wars, but the screaming plains overhead place him firmly in the 20th century.
"Nicky, are you..."
He doesn't get any further because Niccolo surges upward and catches his mouth in a bruising kiss. It's desperate, and there is blood in his mouth, and their teeth catch. They kiss in the open, and it's as exciting as it was the first time, and Niccolo's leg is reattaching with a burning pain. Niccolo holds the back of Yusuf's neck tightly, keeping him close, even as a shell explodes close by. When they pull away, Yusuf's eyes are searching his. "I was never cut out to be a priest," Nicola says, his voice hoarse. 3 years is far too long to follow you around. Do not touch. Do not touch." With that, Nicolo sags back against the side of the trench with relief, his throat working hard as his body stitches itself back together. Yusuf lies alongside Nicolo, pressing their bodies together and shielding him from the rest of the world. "You've had some hard lives before, haven't you?" he asks, speaking in English, a warning that Italian is not safe in this time. "Not like this. You were right there, but you didn't trust me, didn't know me." Their hands hold each other, bloodied, and through bulky uniforms, but it is enough. "You must be coming from the early days." "From the first." "Ah, pazienza, pazienza," Yusuf grins. Nicola cups a hand to Yusuf's cheek, and the brown eyes soften. "Oh, I have missed you. I am right here." There is a particularly close barrage of gunfire, and Nicky grunts. "Where are the others?" he asks. "Booker is embedded with La Resistance. Andrew led the last charge. He's fighting in no man's land. One of Andromache's many disguises." Yusuf's voice catches. "Quinn." "I know," Nicky says, before that particular wound can reopen. He checks his body and finds all parts present. "Well, we have to push to the front." "Why?" "I have no desire to die again today, but I have a score to settle with Andromache." Piles of dead and the front line has advanced a few dozen feet. By the dark of the night, Nicky and Joe are propped up across from each other against the walls of the trench, their legs entangled. Joe takes a long drag of his cigarette, and Nicky hasn't taken his eyes off him since the fighting died down. Nicky gives him a light kick at the hip. "You never told me." Joe's face is barely illuminated by the dim lamp that hangs from the repurposed rubble, but still Nicky catches the quirked eyebrow. "What happened when you went home?" Nicky finishes. "Ah." Joe doesn't pretend he's not delaying the inevitable when he takes another breath of smoke. "I thought you already knew." "No." "It was so long ago, Nicky." There is a chance there for the topic to be dropped, for them to move on from this painful reminder of their own immortality. "Not for me." Joe tilts his head back and closes his eyes. "The word had already reached them by the time I did. The whole city knew I was a traitor. Or was it a deserter? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I would have been killed if I had revealed myself. I had to stay disguised." His words come through stilted, uneasy. "My father was at the city gate, and I walked straight past him. I couldn't stop. If I had stopped, I would have been killed." Nicky moves across the yawning gap between them and tucks himself under Joe's arm. "My parents were doing well, wealthy and respected, better than I thought, to be honest. I thought they would be scorned for what I did. I thought I ruined their lives, but they were okay. That's all I needed to know. I stayed out in the fields in those little lean-to shelters for the harvest. Do you remember?" Joe's hand rests on the back of Nicky's neck. They had a funeral for me. I paid one of the village kids to take me to my own grave. I guess it was easier to pretend I was dead instead of a traitor. Maybe they wanted a place to grieve." Nicky murmurs, "Maybe." Joe's fingers play with the hairs at the nape of Nicky's neck. "I don't want to think about what awful thoughts they must have had about me. It must have been so hard for them, sending me off and being alone, then hearing I was a traitor. My sister's husband died in the siege. I saw her spinning thread. And my nephew saw me, my sister's boy. He was the only one who did. I gave him a coin, and he was convinced I was a ghost. It was the youngest one. Fuck, what was his name?" His hand clenches, another piece of his past slipping away. "I will find out for you," Nicky swears into Joe's chest. There are still many years missing from that time.
Joe holds Nikki close and buries his nose in his soft hair.
I am glad to have you again, Nikki says.
Even in this shithole?
Any shithole is worth it, if I can have you and be yours.
Oh, my dear Nicolo. His fond smile can be heard in his soft voice. And they call me the poet.
To be continued.
Retrograde, Chapter 5, where Nicolo learns. In 1715, Edinburgh, Nicholas is beaten to death in a riot against the unification of what will one day become Great Britain. Andrea drags him to safety and guards his body until Joseph finds them, throws Nicholas onto his back, and they go to their tenement building apartment. They have a small room between the three of them, up on the top level. They have one bed and one chair to share. The shuttered window does nothing to stop the smell of shit coming from the streets, but it's private. Nicholas is healing. His wounds are stitching together, but he's taking a long time to wake up, the longest he's taken since he was dismembered by a cannonball in 1634. Joseph thinks he's going to wake up young. Andrea agrees with his assessment and takes her tobacco down to the streets, waiting for the signal. It's best for Nicholas to have a quiet awakening if he can. There are too many variables. He needs a moment to orientate. Joseph scrubs his face clean as he can and strips Nicholas out of his bloodied shirt sleeves, but the under things are clean enough to stay. His body is mostly healed before he wakes. Nicholas gasps, jolting from the thin bed and grasping at his hair, his chest. His eyes are wild and dart around the room, barely pausing on anything. He doesn't speak, doesn't ask for the year or where they are. He's hyperventilating. He's Nicolo, Joseph says, and his own voice startles him. Nicholas lets forth a barrage of Italian, old Ligurian, and it's not clear if he even expects to be understood.
My head, it was, what is happening? I have never, who the hell is that?
A lump fills Joseph's throat, and he can't speak. He gets up from the chair and pours clean water from their washstand into a tin cup to buy himself some time.
You can call me Joseph.
He turns to take the cup to Nicola, but the room is so small he's halfway across in one step, and his love's eyes fill with fear.
No, don't touch me.
Joseph freezes. He sets the cup down on the floorboards and backs away into his chair. With his foot, he nudges the tin cup towards Nicolo.
You should drink.
Nicolo doesn't take his eyes off him. Slowly, his mouth drops open with realization.
Holy Mother of God, you're the Saracen.
Sitting in his shirt sleeves, waistcoat, and breeches, with the noise of the Scottish city from the window, Joseph feels every year of his 6 centuries removed from the Crusades. But he has to take himself back there for Niccolo's sake, for the sake of every fond memory they have built together. We met each other on the battlefield, Joseph confirms.
You killed me.
And yet you live again, Joseph prods, nodding at Niccolo's body as proof. At that, Nicolo just shakes his head.
This is nothing but pain. This is damnation.
Joseph's heart breaks again. He leans back and the chair creaks. 600 years to prepare, and he still doesn't know what to say. At his hesitation, Nicolo builds up steam.
What are you doing to me?
I am not doing this to you. We are going through it together.
Then we are both damned.
No, Joseph says urgently. We are immortal, living and dying, and living again. There are others like us. We take care of each other.
Nicolo shakes his head again. This is not living.
Joseph looks to the ceiling, willing the tears to hold back. He hears Nicolo shuffle around on the bed and gives him a moment before he leans forward and grabs the tin cup from the floor.
You really should drink something. It's just water. See?
Joseph takes a drink and smiles weakly, like a mouthful of poison would do much.
Nicola nods jerkily, his hands bundled in the thin blankets of the bed. He withdraws one and holds it out, and Joseph takes that as permission to move closer. The moment their hands touch, Nicola pulls his knife from under the pillow and stabs it into Joseph's heart. The wind is knocked out of him.
Demon, Nicola hisses.
Blood is pooling onto his waistcoat, but not much of it. Nicola left the knife in his chest for the satisfaction of seeing it buried to the hilt, so it's holding in most of the blood.
Ow, Joseph says.
This is not the first time Joseph has been stabbed in the heart, though never with so much poetical resonance. After he regains his breath, he grips the handle and slowly eases the knife out, slow enough to let his heart heal around the wound, inch by inch. Joseph smiles in a way he hopes is reassuring, but Nicola is horrified at the tableau.
See?
Joe wipes the knife on the rag by the wash basin. We heal. Nicola presses his back into the wall and doesn't take his eyes off Joseph.
I know you're scared and confused, Joseph says, dropping into the chair and letting the knife clatter by his feet. Please allow me to speak, and I will try my best to explain.
Nicola doesn't move. It's as close to permission as Joseph is going to get.
We are the same in many ways, but different in one.
We don't know why, but we have theories, Joseph begins.
If you had killed me just now, not just wounded, I would have died for a minute, then woken back up right here in this room. But you're different. When you die, you always wake back up, but you wake up in different places, different times.
Nicola finally meets his gaze with disdain.
I know you have no reason to believe me, to trust me, Joseph says in a rush, but surely you've noticed. Your hair is different, your clothes, even the weather. This is not the Holy Land heat.
A long-fingered hand reaches up, grabs at his hair, and tugs.
They shaved my head, Nicola murmurs.
Joe doesn't know what memory Nikki is referring to, but he feels a surge of righteous anger all the same. He focuses to keep his voice level.
You died in 1096, but right now the year is 1715.
At that, Nicola jolts, and Joseph rushes to explain some more.
You didn't lose all those years. One day you'll go back and live them. You weave through and around history and your long, long life.
It's merely a vision.
A nightmare, Nicola insists.
Stick around for a while, you'll see it's not, Joseph suggests. Every time you die, you wake up in a different life. Sometimes forward in time, sometimes back in time.
What kind of life is that? Nicola snarls.
A good one if you let it be so, Joseph counters.
Nicola, we are not on the battlefield here. We can be safe. Or we'll go out to the country. You can see for yourself.
Nicola presses the heels of his hands into his eyes.
Why won't you just let me die and stay dead? He murmurs.
He looks up sharply.
If I kill you, will it stop?
It won't, Joseph says with a soft smile.
But if it makes you feel any better, you are welcome to try.
Nicola sighs and scrapes a hand through his hair. He looks through the shuttered window and out into the street and is silent for a long time.
If you can't stop this torment, then I have nothing more to say to you, Nicola says with finality.
Nicola, Joseph breathes, you can't ignore me forever. I am trying to help you. But he gets no response.
A horse in the street whinnies, and Joe can hear shouting from the level below.
Okay, Joseph says.
Listen, Andromache is downstairs. There's a woman. She's like us. She's incredible. She can help you understand.
Nothing.
Niccolo's face is to the window, his shoulders a hard line.
I'll go get her.
Joseph picks up the knife and on second thought also grabs the swords and axe that are wrapped up in a cloth behind the door.
Niccolo, Joseph says, the bundle tucked under his arm, I'm sorry for everything.
No movement. No recognition. There's a chasm between them 600 years deep. He latches the door behind him and hesitates before he pulls out the metal key and locks Nikki in there. It seems cruel, but necessary. The key is heavy and uncomfortable as he clutches it in his hand all the way down many flights of stairs. Andromache has her hair tucked up into a cap, leaning against the side of their building in a wind. She's chewing tobacco noisily and spits it out when she sees Joseph. Joseph has never hidden anything from her, and she always reads him easily. She quickly embraces him. Her hand cups the nape of his neck and strokes the soft curls there. How is he?
He's young. I think this is the first, he says into her shoulder. I mean, the first time he's understood. There's been quick deaths. He's scared. His eyes scrunch shut. He won't speak to me.
Oh, Yusuf. Endless lives she's lived and still endless sympathy. I'll talk to him. They pull back from their embrace, and Andromache strokes a hand over the bloody tear in Joseph's waistcoat.
He stabbed me.
That's my boy, Andromache smiles. Joseph's laugh is a wet, sad thing. I feel so fucking helpless. Andromache presses their foreheads together. There's a crash of wood and a dull thump. A woman screams, piercing. Voices raise, and Joseph and Andromache rush back into the street. The sight that greets them is horrific. Faced with his new reality, trapped in an unfamiliar place, Niccolo had hurled himself through the window several stories high. He had hit the ground hard and snapped his own neck. The one that wakes up knows them, comforts them, and they don't talk about where the younger one went. The Niccolo that threw himself into the street wakes up in the Holy Land in the middle of a battle. Now this is familiar. The smell, the heat, the noise.
A dream, he says to himself. Nothing but a dream.
Someone calls out for him, his actual name, and Niccolo responds in Ligurian that is understood. A man grasps his elbow. The face is unfamiliar, but definitely one of his countrymen, and he pulls Niccolo to his feet. I thought you were dead, the soldier says. Niccolo looks down at the mud where he'd been lying, trying to see his blood mixed in, but it's all too dark to see.
So did I.
The soldier grins at him, all white teeth, and claps him on the shoulder. In the heat of battle, there is no time to argue. They just accept the miracle. For one long week, Niccolo fights with his countrymen again, and the routine is familiar and welcome. Some of the faces he recognizes, some he doesn't, but they all know him well, particularly the young man that pulled him to his feet.
What is his name?
Why doesn't he recognize him? It never comes up, but the soldier talks freely with Niccolo about his small vineyard back home, the way the pigs snuffle at his boots, the little brother who waved him off to war. Too quickly they are fighting again for their holy cause when the front lines break. It's messy. Confusion reigns as the war becomes man to man, each just fighting to survive.
Niccolo,
the soldier calls again. He slices a Saracen in the thigh and yells out, the enemy general is moving to the fray.
Two more, Niccolo cuts down. Then this is our chance.
The soldier grabs him.
No, his bodyguard is fearsome. No one who goes up against him lives.
Show me. They fight their way over the ridge to where the battle is thickest. Bodies are everywhere, intermingled, and many of them are still groaning, reaching for help as the two of them trudge past.
See there, by the standard.
There is a warrior there, escorting a man with bright armor. The warrior is turbaned, his armor bloodied, and he wields his sword with fury.
Watch out! Nicola pushes the other soldier out of the way. The forward guard has reached them. Three guards, strong and courageous, raise their swords toward Niccolo and his fellow soldier, and the fight is on. They are fast, and like most sword fights, it's over in two or three hits. Niccolo is caught by a deep slash to the arm, and another hit on his wrist has him dropping his sword. He tackles his attacker to the ground and gets to work, making his fists bloody. The other young soldier doesn't survive the skirmish. Once Niccolo has victory, he finds him under the body of a Saracen, eyes dead and mouth agape. Niccolo heaves the Saracen off him and touches their foreheads together, closing both of their eyes. In this small beat of quiet among the bloody battle, Niccolo notices the pain of his arm has faded, and the same where his wrist was cut. He scrapes blood off his hands and searches for any sign of wound or damage. His heart sinks. He finds none. He looks up from his brief mourning. There in the distance again is the Saracen warrior, the one no one can fight and live, the one that haunts Niccolo's dreams. It's true. All of it. But here is the chance to have revenge, to escape. He gropes around for his sword and charges at the man, screaming obscenities. It's quite a distance between them, littered with enemies on both sides and bodies piling up. Niccolo adds to them without hesitation or remorse. As he screams, the Saracen warrior notices and cries out, knowing his name as he somehow always does. Niccolo! It is even more infuriating than the first time. Niccolo swears to make good on the man's offer to kill him, anything for a chance to end it all. Release me from this curse! Their swords meet once, twice, and the warrior is saying something back to him in fractured Ligurian. Stop torturing me! Let me die! Niccolo screams. He knocks away the curved sword and has a clear opening. He takes it and runs his sword straight through the other man's chest. Blood spurts everywhere. The Saracen stills, light fading from his brown eyes. Niccolo gets one short moment of righteous victory, then he catches a crossbow bolt in his throat. Blood pours into his lungs and spits from his lips. The jeep veers sharply around a corner, Andy taking it hard and fast as she always does. There's chaos in the back. They're all shouting at each other. Nicky is on the floor of the truck, splayed out on his back, the same way Andy threw him in during their rush to escape. Joe is cradling his head in his lap, calling for him over and over. Nicky, Nicky, wake up, please. Destati, Heati. What's going on back there? Hard right, Nala calls out, and Andy slams the truck hard, darting around a burned-out car in their way. Niall grips a handle tightly through the turn to stop from swinging, but the boys are bounced around in the back. I don't know, Niall calls out. He's not waking up. Joe, Andy yells. Gunfire rains over them, a few stray bullets slamming into their hood. Fuck! She hands Niall an assault rifle and points at the guard tower near the compound gate they're barreling towards. Niall swings her torso out the window and takes aim. Her aim is true, even with the bouncing truck, and they have a clear run to freedom. He's not alive, Joe groans. Andy reaches behind herself and slaps Joe over the head. Stop fucking looking at his face and check his body. Yes, boss? Yes, boss, Joe parrots. He slides a hand down and under Nikki's bloodied shirt, feeling for the open gunshot wounds, but he finds nothing but sticky warm blood. Nikki's skin is stitched over, and Joe even grabs one of the bullets as it's forced from Nikki's gut. Healing, Joe reports. Then give him time. They're out, now, out on the road trailing through the dense forest. An explosion far behind them rocks the jeep. Niall spins around and sees a fireball rolling through the sky and black smoke pouring from their handiwork. She swings back into the truck. Joe, what? Is all she gets to ask, because at that moment, Nicky wakes up. His arms are the first thing to lash out, jerking and grabbing for some form of stability in the bouncing truck. Then it's his voice, a wordless, awful scream, yelling for something, some form of relief. His legs are kicking out, and then his whole body is thrashing.
No, no,
Nikki screams.
Nikki,
Joe calls gently, touching his face.
Get your fucking hands off me,
Nikki bellows in his native tongue.
Sadison scum!
Joe pulls his hands away, but Nikki is still jolting and kicking out. He's louder than Niall has ever heard him. Andy squares, flicking her head back and forth from the dangerous road to what's happening in the back of the truck. Nikki scrambles away from Joe, then makes a move to throw himself toward the open back of the truck, the road that will be swarming with evacuees out for blood, for Nikki's blood. He was the one who set the charges.
No,
Joe yells and tackles him to the truck bed. He pins him down, arms wrapped around his torso to stop his escape.
It should have worked. It should have worked.
Nikki is sobbing, no less violent. He cracks his head back into Joe's nose. He sinks his teeth into the meat of Joe's arm around his neck, and blood spills over his lips.
What the fuck?
Niall launches herself over the back of the front seat to where they are struggling. Andy tosses her the medical kit.
Sedate him.
Niall doesn't understand the words Nikki's screaming, but she hears the desperation and moves quickly. She pulls out a hypodermic needle and their morphine supply.
If you overdose him, Joe warns, I won't.
It takes long moments for the sedative to take effect. Niall has to pin down Nikki's legs when he tries to roll them all over and kick them off, but his heart is beating jackrabbit fast, and soon his movements become sluggish. He releases the iron bite he had on Joe's arm and tries to speak again, spitting out blood into the air. Niall doesn't know much Italian yet, but even she understands the begging in his voice.
No, no, per favore, non posso.
As Nikki's attempts to escape slow down, Joe gently releases his hold, purposefully unclenching his muscles and beginning to stroke him gently. He's asleep but alive when they hit the open, smooth roads. Andy clenches the steering wheel.
Fuck.
Nikki wakes up in the safe house, in a room stripped of all weapons. He was dressed and cleaned while he was unconscious. His hands are bound in front of his body with something he will one day learn are called handcuffs, and connected to a chain around the bedpost. Again, 300 years later, a week later, it doesn't matter which direction you count it, Joe sits in the single chair across from him. The morphine releases Nikki from its haze slowly. He has enough time to get his bearings. He flexes his wrists against the bindings.
Release me,
he demands, softly, coolly.
No.
He surges upwards, full of fury.
Get these fucking chains off me!
I will not. Nikki sits up and tests the slack of the chain. There is enough length for him to rush at Joe, but not quite reach him. He stands over him, spitting, vitriol.
You son of a whore! You fucking demon! I've killed you before, I will kill you again! I will rip out your throat with my teeth!
He pulls, hard as he can, trying to close the 2 feet distance between them.
Release me!
Somehow Joe retains his composure. That's not much of an incentive for me to unlock those chains, he says mildly. I'm not releasing you while you're acting like this. Nikki spits in his face. Joe sighs and wipes it away. What do you remember?
I remember killing you,
Nikki sneers.
Twice now I've run you through, and another I stabbed you in the heart.
Ah, I thought so. Joe furrows his brow, trying to place everything he knows about these early lives into a timeline.
Unlock these chains,
Nikki demands again.
Why?
So you can go on killing and dying and being killed again? Is that really what you want?
You know what I want, Joseph.
And I can't give it to you. Joe spreads out his arms. We are at an impasse, so I'm going to bring in someone else. Joe pushes the chair another few feet away from Nikki, then gets up and goes to the door. He hesitates before going through, hand on the door handle.
Give it a chance, please, Niccolo,
Give precisely what a chance is left unsaid. This life, immortality, his curse, the others, he could mean it all. Joseph leaves, and a few minutes later, a woman takes his place. She is tall, with short-cut dark hair, and she's holding a bottle of wine and two glasses. They're the finest crafted things Niccolo's ever seen. Hello, Niccolo. I am Andromache the Scythian. Call me Andy. Niccolo studies her. I know your face. He has a flash of memory, of cold white light and smooth cave walls. You were dead, and then you weren't. Yeah, Andy laughs softly. That about sums it up. But I don't do that anymore. Die? Come back to life. She slumps down in the chair and cracks open the bottle of wine. I'm the only one here you can hit, and I'll stay hurt. I thought some consequences for your actions could do you good. She pours one generous glass of deep red wine. I don't care, Niccolo says, boorish. You might. And you can't undo that action. So I can pour you a glass, but if you stab me with it, I could die, so... She hovers the mouth of the bottle over the second glass and waits. Do we take that risk? Niccolo's tongue feels dry and tacky in his mouth. I won't hurt you, he promises. Attaboy. She fills it, just as large as the first, and hands it to him. Of course, if you use that glass to kill yourself, you'll only wake up somewhere else, and I can't guarantee it will be as pleasant as this. It's different with this woman. With Joseph, there is a tension, a friction. One might even call it bad blood. Andy is compelling, commanding. She has the air of assumed leadership, and Niccolo can't help but be drawn to it. So there is an end to it, Niccolo muses. Nothing that lives, lives forever. Then how can I stop it? How can I be like you? I want to be mortal again. His voice is urgent, but he takes a step back and sits on the edge of the bed. The wine sloshes in his glass without spilling. His body betrays him, showing his tiredness. We don't control when it ends. Andy speaks more directly than Joseph, less attempts to soften and deflect. It's merely my time. Niccolo uses both hands, as they are still bound together, and lifts the wine to his lips. He half splutters at the taste of it. Madre de Dio, this wine is good. Andy laughs, and it's a joyful thing to come from a woman with eyes so haunted. They don't water it down like they used to, she grins slyly. Wait until we get to the hard stuff. The glass is half emptied before Niccolo pauses. Too long it's been since he's had any part of luxury. Is it true what he says? That I move back and forth through time? Yes. Why? Andy makes a small amused sound and kicks backwards on her chair, splaying out her legs. That way madness lies. She raises the glass to her nose to inhale, then drinks deeply. I think it's a way to keep the rest of us together, to keep us sane, on the right path. Niccolo tries to carefully broach the topic. When you say us, the others like us, immortals, I lead the team. She smiles at him, easy and free, and he realizes that his first assessment of her was incorrect. Incomplete. Yes, this is a woman haunted, but she is also kind and gentle. Her eyes soften as she speaks of her team. There is clearly a deep love there. Niccolo drinks again. Easy, tiger. We better put some food in your belly before it all goes to your head. She points an accusing finger at him. You're a sloppy drunk. Niccolo stays where he sits, and his eyes slide to the door like he's expecting a bowl of slop to be passed through it. But instead, Andy stands and swings a ring of tiny keys around her finger. At his confused look, she smiles, and this time it's a little bit sad. You think you're a prisoner here? She asks. Am I not? He jangles the handcuffs pointedly. His guard goes up again. All the goodwill won is lost in smoke. You were going to get yourself killed, or one of my people. I can't have that.
What does it matter? One more death among dozens.
Hey! Andy's tone is sharp, and she puts a hand on his shoulder that is equal parts caring and a warning. It matters how we live. And we've got a chance here to take a moment to explain what's going on, to make it so when you wake up, you're not so goddamn confused.
She sits down on the bed next to him, close enough that he could hurt her if he wanted to.
Give me this life. A year, maybe two. Then when you die and wake up in the 13th century or whatever, you can fuck off back to Genoa and become a priest for all I care.
It's a lie that she doesn't care, but one that Niccolo easily accepts.
I just want to help you get your bearings, she says softly. That's all.
Is it? He asks, steel in his voice. She doesn't answer him.
She rubs her thumb over one of the small keys and sighs.
Listen, I'll get these off you, but if you try to kill any of my people out there, I'll get involved myself.
You're worried I would kill you.
Oh, no, you can't land a hit on me, Nico. But it's cute that you think you could.
It should seem boastful, but her words ring true.
If you try to take a knife to Joe again, you'll wake up somewhere worse than this place, and it will be a long time before you rest again.
She puts the key to the handcuffs, but doesn't unlock them yet.
Do we have an understanding?
Niccolo is more than a little afraid of her, and he agrees.
It's not far to walk from the bedroom to the common space. Joseph is standing there, arms crossed over his chest, and seated at the table is a woman Niccolo doesn't recognize. He looks around the room.
Not much of a team, he says.
Andy strides past him.
We're down a few right now, she throws over her shoulder. Thanks for being tactful about it.
Andy,
Joseph warns.
The younger woman points at a bowl of soup and a slice of bread at the table next to her.
Eat. For you, she says.
For the first time, Niccolo notices that everyone has been speaking his native tongue, with no hesitation or confusion. Only this woman stumbles through her words.
Niccolo takes his seat beside her, his eyes still darting around. He's not sure he could eat. His stomach feels too cramped and unsettled. But the smell, oh, it's enchanting.
He groans and brings his face close to the dish. The color is a deep red, but it doesn't smell like beetroot or radish.
What is this? He asks, dunking the bread into the bowl and ripping into it with his teeth.
Soup, the young woman answers. Tomato.
Niccolo looks at her blankly, but she doesn't expand on it, so he shrugs and goes back to his meal.
She's shocked and exclaims something in an unfamiliar language, but he catches a reference to Italy.
Joseph answers back in the other language and Andy is laughing. It sets him on edge that they are talking about him in a foreign tongue, laughing at him.
The young woman isn't laughing, though, and looks just as bewildered as he feels.
The other two take their seats and begin to eat. The young woman clears her throat and sticks out a hand to him.
I'm Nile, she says in rough Ligurian. I'm new.
Niccolo di Genova. He shakes her hand. I am new as well.
Nile's grin, even as she tries to hide it, is a bright and beautiful thing.
To be continued.